And we're live. Hey folks, this is Walt. And as you might have guessed, once again, we are on the Indie Creator Spotlight for the Banff Podcast. And today we are going back around, circling to pick up the stray that fell out. And if you're a soldier or have been in the military for longer than 5 minutes, you got that joke. We're talking to the first person we interviewed on the Indie Creator Spotlight. Mr. Nick Garber of Guerrilla Comics. How are you, sir?
Good, good. Good to be here.
We are so stoked to have you for many reasons. Number one, we are looking at all the swag in your house and taking notes so we can order that shit ourselves.
Yeah, that's always good. You gotta press the merchandise because the comics are one thing, but you know, you can't wear a comic book until now.
No, yeah, that's true. Especially with that shirt. Oh my God, that's one of my favorite covers from Phantom Hawk. Is
mine
that,
too.
That particular shirt.
Mine too. I got an email from the company who I won't shamelessly plug on here, but it was just like a random cold call email because of stuff that I've ordered through other publishers or T-shirt sites. I'm like, hey, check us out. Price was right. I was like, man, what am I gonna put on a shirt? And then I look behind me and up there is that cover.
Oh, nice.
So I was like, man, I'm turning that into a shirt. I always thought that'd be an awesome shirt. So I did that, and it was a no-brainer. It's like, I got to make that shirt. And Tony, he did an awesome job coloring that. He's colored our banner that you're going to see it. If you happen to be in South Texas or in St. Louis in June, you'll see the banners there. His color work is just amazing. He has an amazing palette. And I feel less of a soldier for knowing what a palette is, other than being something made of wood that you stack ammo boxes on.
Did you ever have trouble going from soldier to artist, having to change back and forth the lingo?
Yeah, a little bit. Because there's, when you're trying to explain something, you know, a soldier will aggressively explain it, you know, and his word will not be challenged because he goes in there and he's explaining something with such confidence, you know, that anybody asking questions, it's like a challenge to whatever he was doing. So those are things that I had to learn to work on, not be so aggressive in my delivery, especially during critiques. You know, when you're telling your teacher to, or your professor, hey, sit down, wait till I'm done, I'll get to you in a minute, you know, with the knife hand.
And have you ever accidentally knife-handed somebody and had an entire room of people fall to the floor?
No.
So conventions are safe.
You can feel the knife hand coming. So it's like, and I'll turn it into a point and point to my project. Try and redirect it. So they're like, his hand was going to, and it went to this.
So convention.
I'm sorry, go ahead. So the lingo, most of the people that I've had the pleasure of working with, they have caught on to the lingo, so they try. So I don't have to change that much, but, you know, still sometimes they just give me that deer in the headlights look like, I don't know what you said. That was all acronyms.
Right on. So since the last time we talked, there's been some restructuring and reorganization, and now we have Guerrilla Comics.
Yeah.
Can you give us a rundown of the team and what you guys are up to for the moment?
Okay. Well, we'll just kind of start how this thing created. Back in the Blackjack comic days, I brought on this artist named Clint Scott. He used to work in the bullpen at Marvel, you know, filling in stuff. And, you know, he was an apprentice to, I can't remember the name of the artist he was an apprentice to, but it was a name, you know, taught him some things, showed him some stuff. So we got to talking and I loved his artwork. I loved his style. And, you know, we get to a point where we're doing a lot of concept development for new characters, things that are a little bit darker, as far as content. And, more into that grittier world. So we all had this idea that we were going to keep our family-friendly titles like Pendragon and Sunscreen, who I'll talk about restructuring. We had to restructure that entire character. we're going to keep them on the Blackjack Comics main label. And then we had this idea that all the grittier characters would be under what we called Guerrilla Comics. So Phantom Hawk was going to move over there, and then you're going to have Bengali, and then some of our grittier street heroes. It'd be more like a Marvel Knights line, or maybe even Vertigo. So kind of move forward a little bit to the summer of 2015, Blackjack Comics ends up just going under due to some creative differences between me and the other owner. And so I was kind of like, crap, I just walked away from my own company. So now what am I going to do? And then I was talking to Clint. He's like, well, why don't we just move forward with Guerrilla? I'm like, brilliant. So we started looking for talent who wanted to be on the ground floor on this. And we had a buddy of mine named Rene Garza, he pitched me one of his comics when I was still doing Blackjack. And I loved the story. It was a little space odyssey type deal. Approved it on the way, hit him up, asked if he wanted to come on board as a partner. He agreed. I had Kendra Hale, who's an anchor. She's also a phenomenal writer as well. She contacted her next, see if she wanted to be in on it. So we united the four of us, and first thing we did was come up with the logo, and we just been kind of rocking and rolling, trying to get everything ready for this year. So we had a rebuilding year, as they would say in the sports world.
Hopefully nobody was doing a lot of catching, just a lot of pitching and batting.
just a lot of pitching and batting. Yeah, the last year has just been all development, concept development, setting up our world, planning issues. We're kind of where we missed the mark with Blackjack, and we're kind of missing the mark here too, is that we probably should have had 3 or 4 issues of each book we wanted to run, you know, ready to go, and then just slowly release them. So we had some build up time. But what I love about indie comics, and I love about indie comic fans, is that if you have a good product, they're willing to wait, you know, and I try not to make them wait too long. And for you Phantom Hawk fans out here, I'm so sorry it's taken a year and a half to get issue 5 in your greedy little hands, but I assure you that it's worth the wait.
Absolutely stoked about it. And you know, it wouldn't be an interview if I didn't ask prying questions. Could we possibly see a collected or a trade paperback of issues 1 through 4 for Phantom?
Absolutely.
Hawk?
What we're going to be doing during the con season right now, and this builds up to the trade, I'm not going to reprint any individual copies of 1 through 4 unless you go to like Indie Planet or Drive Through Comics and pick it up through there. But through me, I'm not going to personally print anymore, sell them at the cons. But what I am going to do is, if you buy issue 5, you'll sign up for the mailing list, and then I will give you access to a Dropbox where you can grab issues 1 through 4. That way, because I know a lot of people are like, well, why would I buy issue 5 if I don't have issues 1 through 4? You know, especially in places that I've never been before, like I'm going to Mighty Con in St. Louis. I don't know. I'm still kind of torn. I might print out a few runs of that. I don't know. But I'm really sticking to the digital idea. And then once I finish issue 7, which would be the final story of that arc, put them together in a trade paperback and throw in some new artwork here and there and some concept sketches and just throw in a lot of extras to, you know, kind of sell it a little bit, you know, so it's just not straight story. You get a little of everything, some concept work that Clint's done, fan sketches, things like that. And what I'm going to try to do in a couple of weeks is get Jay Lee to do a sketch cover of Phantom Hawk, and I'll see if he'll go for it, and then get his permission to throw that on there as well.
Oh, write it on. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, I said Jay Lee, right? I didn't say
now,
Jay. Okay.
Anyway,
I can't afford Jim.
you can just afford the one letter? Joke. Bad joke.
Just J. That's the only letter I can afford, and that's still $4,000.
So for folks who are you know, just experiencing you for the first time, one of the great things about the Phantom Hawk title is that when I look at Phantom Hawk and I read the Phantom Hawk title, it's so exciting for me to see the supporting cast. I love the supporting cast in Phantom Hawk. One of the reasons I really dig this book is, and it was the thing that hooked me immediately, was that in all four issues, they weren't the typical comic book trope of the tag-along side cast. You know, yeah. Oh, look, Jimmy Olsen's in trouble again. Oh, Lois fell off another building. Oh, well, you know.
Oh, Perry's found himself in a predicament. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, these are competent professional individuals who have backgrounds. They all contribute to the story. The female characters that you see aren't like, oh no, I've broken a nail. While they retain their femininity, they're also not helpless. You know, it was just so great to see a story where you had this amazing cast of characters that all have personality, that all you can care about and remember their names and remember who they are. And at the same time, it's still supporting this main character, you know, that you're following. Can you give folks like the basic pitch of Phantom Hawk and kind of bring him into that world?
Yeah, Phantom Hawk is the story of Max Malone. He is a special forces soldier who, let me back up. I was about to give you like the really long pitch and we'd be here all day, but what it boils down to is Phantom Hawk is the story of a man trying to recapture his life. So what we mean by that is he was a special forces soldier. He was critically wounded in Afghanistan on an operation. And he was recruited into a special program that was designed to help fix soldiers on the battlefield using certain technologies. So now he's on the run because he's been framed for destroying the very program that created him and fixed him. And now he's on the run. He had very limited resources or support, actually zero support. And that's where, when you jump into the story, it's him starting to build those support relationships to help him out, because he kind of realizes that he can't do this all on his own, you know. And you have, you know, the awesome supporting cast. You have Dr. Nicole Good. A lot of people laugh. They're like, oh, her name's Dr. Good. And I'm like, well, it's because it's based off a real person, you know. Who's a friend of mine who, you know, she's PhD she used to do cancer research. Now she works for Pfizer. But anyway, shameless plug for her. The cops, Downs and Gonzo, you know, these were people that I deployed with, you know, so their personalities is how I remember that. Well, they're still alive, but how I always kind of remember our interactions together, you know, and I put that in their dialogue, you know, things that they would say, you know, that just was unique to them, where I could, if I heard them talking in a dark room, I'd know it was them just based on how they say things. And then you have the villains, Killjoy and Black Shroud. You have your Brute, who is not always brutish. You know, he's not your typical dumb brute. He does have a tactical mind. And then you have Black Shroud, who's your, you know, your big bad, you know, the guy that's running the show.
And I got to say, you know, we talked about this the last time you were on. Really iconic look for him. You know, really, he catches you on the page.
Yeah. I grew up being a big fan of Daredevil and Batman. You know, and their looks are very simple. And when I first did Phantom Hawk, he didn't have a cape. You know, he didn't have a cape. He didn't. The cowls pretty much stayed the same throughout the years and the color scheme. But the cape was something I added. Man, when was that? It was probably like early 2000s. I'm like, you know, he's going to have a cape. But the cape needs to have a purpose. There needs to be a reason for it. You know, Batman uses his cape to look like a bat and to, I don't know why Superman has a cape. I don't know. It looks cool when he's flying. But everything about the suit that he wears has a tactical purpose to it. So, not to give anything away, but that even that cape has certain attributes that help him in his quest to, you know, seek revenge, find the people that, you know, betrayed him and set him up and, you know, help him on his quest. So it's a really cool item and later on in the issues, I'd really like to utilize it more. I utilized it pretty well in the very first issue, and the rest of the time, I don't even think I've shown that power that it has. So, but that's something I'd like to get back to because I just think it's a fun thing to draw.
So you snuck a covert copy of issue number 5, which, you know, fans of your work have been probably bugging you for the last year and a half for.
They, about 6 months ago, they stopped contacting me altogether. So hopefully I didn't lose them. Because I'm constantly on social media posting things that, you know, that it's coming. So hopefully they're picking up on that, and that's why they're not asking so much. But it's coming, right, I assure on. You. April 28th, it launches. Well, it's a soft launch. But the hard launch will be in June, full color cover. And I think I showed you the cover, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Yeah. And the copy that I might or might not have seen and or possess has what looks like a sketch cover.
Yeah, we're going to do a sketch cover. I just thought that would be a really cool idea. It seems to be a really big thing right now, especially in, you know, for your artists, alley artists, they're always picking up, you know, sketch covers so they can do stuff. And I figured why not have a sketch cover of our own that we can do. So the two books that we're launching later this month, Guerrilla Warfare will be a sketch cover, and so is Phantom Hawk. Both of them will be black and white interiors for this launch. They're going to be limited edition con exclusives. So the con I'm doing in South Texas, it'll have their logo on it. The con I'm doing in St. Louis will have their logo on it. So when you buy a book, I will knock out a sketch for you right there.
That's fantastic. So can you tell us about Guerrilla Warfare a little bit?
Guerrilla Warfare is going to be our anthology book. We just don't have the staff to pump out all of the characters and stories that we have lined up. But a way for us to do that is to have this anthology book where we're doing short, anywhere between 8 and 13 page stories, you know, to give you a little introduction into the other characters in the Guerrilla Comics universe. What we have up first for Guerrilla Warfare 1 is Wrath of Redemption starring the Cardinal. And then you have Corvin and Sparrow, which is our girl power, you know, Batman and Robin kick-ass female, you know, crime-fighting duo. And they have an interesting story of their own as well. So they're not – I try to not make carbon copies of existing characters. So I spent a lot of time in the development phase to make sure that they're as unique as possible and that the stories will actually grab the audience. So – I'm excited about Guerrilla Warfare. I was really excited working on Wrath of Redemption, written by Ray Merrick. Just a fantastic story. What our idea was that when we started doing the Cardinal, because he wanted to write a book, he wanted to publish a comic book, and I read some of his stuff. And I'm like, well, hey, man, I got some B-listers here in a notebook. Why don't we go through them, and we'll pick a character, and then we'll develop it. And we were doing Facebook live streams about the process and all that for a couple of weeks. And that made it really fun. Something that, like, we kind of want to collect on a Blu-ray or DVD one day and put it out with a book. Thinking way ahead.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's the Cardinal you're talking about, right?
The Cardinal. Yeah. He picked out, well, he's from St. Louis. So obviously that was the first thing when he saw the Cardinal, he was like, that's it. That's what we're doing. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, so we discussed some of the ideas that I had for the Cardinal originally. And we picked it, and then we started just brainstorming and rolling with it and developing that world. So even though he's a little bit on the Cardinal is, he's more of our, he's like a, more of a supernatural aspect of the Guerrilla Comics universe. You know, where Phantom Hawk is your street level, gritty crime fighter, reluctant hero type. Corvin and Sparrow is kind of, I don't think I really have anything to compare him to. It's deals with a lot of, Corvin Sparrow deals with a lot of secret societies and intelligence gathering, and there's a revenge tale in there, and, you know, being ostracized from the only home you ever knew, the only organization that you ever knew. Where we get into the Cardinal is we start dealing with angels, devils, demons, more of the supernatural world, even though he wears his bright red suit. You know, he's got these angelic type powers, you know, and when you dig into the book, it really goes into depth on why he exists and what he's doing there and what his purpose is and how limited his purpose is.
And folks who wanted to get a kick up on the artwork can also pick up a shirt right now, right?
Yes, there's a booster campaign going on right now. I've been sharing it on every social media page I could. It's on Instagram, if you're following me on there, Nick Garber Art. It's on my Twitter, at Nick Garber Art. It's on the Nick Garber Art page on Facebook, the Gorilla Comics page on Facebook, and the Phantom Hawk page on Facebook. Cardinal doesn't have one yet, but he'll probably have one soon. I think he's going to be pretty popular.
Nice. And last time we talked to you, there were some hints at a possible cowl being created for Phantom Hawk. Did that ever come into being?
My prop making skills are limited. I tried to make a latex cowl of Phantom Hawk, and the sculpting phase is where it was really kicking me in the butt, because I am not a sculptor by trade. And as much as I read on the subject and had all the right tools, I just didn't have the talent. I got pretty close. The hiccup I was having was it always looked kind of lumpy. You know, there was always little divots in there. So I was trying to heat it up and smooth it out, and then I just seemed to make it worse. And my wife's like, "This, there's clay all over the house. You got to stop this. Either you got to finish it or stop it. You got to pick one." And I'm like, okay, so I'll get to it eventually. I had like a mannequin head, and then when I like did all the measurements and did the measurements on myself, I'm like, this thing would have never fit had I got it done anyway. I would have tore it putting it on my head. So I did order a mannequin dummy head that's designed for that kind of work, and I'm kind of hoping I'm going to get to it here. So it's a little passion side project for me, because I think that'd be really cool to display at a con, you know, have that latex cowl, you know. And then I talked to some prop making companies, and it was just going to be way too expensive to, you know, to get it done. It's like, oh man, I could print more books with that, or I could hire this guy, you know, instead of having a cowl that's going to sit on my shelf. You know, I can use that money to get more books out quicker. And so one day, hopefully the cowl will happen.
Right on. Now, the other thing that that we were looking at is there were possible renditions of the Karambit knives that he uses. Did those ever come into being?
Yeah, actually, I'm gonna step away real quick and reach for them. I don't know if I showed you these last time. They might not have been made yet.
But. Yeah. You showed me them. Shared an email.
Yeah. Oh, dropped it. Oh, good thing they're not sharp. But yeah, a buddy of mine, he makes knives, and he's like, hey man, I really want to make these for you. And I'm like, I'm not going to say no. So,
right on.
And I fidget, and these things are perfect for that. You know, so I'm sitting there and I'm drawing, and I'm just flipping them around. And
oh wow, you're pretty good at that right now. Yeah. Most people when they mess with a karambit for the first time, usually whack themselves.
So. Yeah, I made that mistake with a real one and cut myself on the cheek. The real life person that Downs is based off of, he had one while we were in Iraq, and he was always flipping around and playing with it. I'm like, oh man, let me see that thing, because I'd never seen one before. I thought they looked cool. Before 2005, Phantom Hawk was using guns and K-bars and stuff, you know, and I was like, man, I have never seen those in a comic book, or at least, no, I've never seen one. I've never seen used by a villain, a hero, anybody. I'm like, that'd be a really cool weapon for him to have, you know. So I elongated him a little bit. He's got different ones that he can use for different things. He has ones that he can throw, and you know, I went really crazy with the idea and the possibilities of this thing. You know, but we, on your downtime, you're sitting there flipping around, you know, trying not to cut yourself, because they are very sharp.
Yeah, I got my trainer right here within reach. So of course, you know, if I need to, I can play around as well, but, and you know, obviously, but so we also, we, you know, we talked a little bit about Phantom Hawk. We talked about, Corvid, excuse me, about, Cardinal. There we go.
Cardinal.
So why don't we start bringing people into, what are we going to see in Guerrilla Comics? So we just learned a quick update on Phantom Hawk. We talked about, God, I'm fidgeting now with my own karambit. We got Cardinal going a little bit. And so you had mentioned sunscreen and that sunscreen was going to be taking a different turn. Yes. We talked about him a little bit last time because we have, when I talked to you last time, I had picked up your entire catalog. Yeah, so,
and sunscreen was on there.
So I read about, read about sunscreen. So talk about the changes to sunscreen and what we could hope to see when he reappears.
Well, sunscreen, first of all, the first thing that changed was the name. We're changing it to Sunburst. The inside joke, or the joke that I was kind of wanting to have with Sunscreen and how he got his name, it just, nobody was getting it. So apparently I was the only one that found it funny. So they're like, the name makes no sense. And I'm like, okay, all right, I'll budge. And I opened it up with the rest of the team. And they all started throwing out their suggestions. And the one that we all agreed on was Sunburst. We thought that sounded pretty cool. We changed him from being an adult to being a early teenager when he's in his normal, you know, human form. I'm trying not to give too much away. But Sunburst is actually a human being that comes in contact with an alien consciousness, and that alien consciousness can bestow powers upon people, but they have to be pure of heart. They have to be somewhat innocent, you know. So that alien entity usually picks someone young in age now, but when their powers activate, they will be in a young adult form. So it's not like a, you know, young Nova or anything rolling around. So you could compare it to Shazam, and I'm sure people are going to. You know, Shazam, Captain Marvel, Billy Bastion relationship. But there's more to it than that. There's a relationship between the alien entity and, Sam, that is really kind of touching. Kendra's writing the story for it right now, and Clint's just finishing up the cover and getting ready to do the interiors. Really beautiful cover. Really depicting Sunburst in his, you know, totally powered up. So when I read the script that Kendra sent initially, I actually got a little teary-eyed because it really kind of tugs in that heartstrings. You know, if you've ever had a close relationship with a parental type figure, either your mother, father, an uncle or something, you know, you've had that close family relationship. That's what you're going to see in this book between Proxys, which is the name of the entity, and Sam, as they kind of experience this transformation of him becoming this hero, this being this protector, you know, and going after Burnout, which is the villain who doesn't care who he takes over as long as they're just bitter and full of hate. And, you know, he goes after probably the least desirable personality traits in a person so he can take them over and amplify that because he believes that.
Now that's anger pretty cool because, like, not only do you have a Captain Marvel type vibe going on, but there are also shades of Green Lantern. That's pretty slick.
Yeah. And where we were kind of heading when he was Sunscreen was getting a little too much like GL, and we wanted to get away from that. We wanted that space exploration. We wanted that we're not the only ones in the universe, that it's a very big, you know, universe out there, and that there's threats all around, and some threats are bigger than others. We wanted that. We wanted to have that cosmic side to our universe, not just street level heroes and villains and, you know, angels and demons dealing with supernatural stuff. We really wanted to have that expansion, you know, that total almost like Marvel-esque type universe, you know, or DC. I mean, just we wanted that big world that we could play around in, because we're getting ready to put out these new books, and we're the thing that we're always talking about when we're online, and we talk to each other every day, the whole team does, is we want to do a giant crossover, bring all the characters in and have them, you know, interact. And of course they're not all going to get along because that'd be boring. You're going to have personality conflicts, you know, and have them fight that big bad. And we're, and having this huge universe where we have the cosmic threats, we have the supernatural threats, we can choose from any of those and put them together or use them as singularities to bring the team together. And but I don't feel like giving it like a team name like the Avengers or Justice League or anything like that. Just it's like these guys all just kind of silently agreed that if stuff gets really crazy, yeah, text me, I'll be there. Yeah.
So that's very modern of you. Yeah, just text me, I'll be there.
Yeah, just send me a tweet. You know, we don't need a signal in the sky or a watchtower. Just tweet me at Phantom Hawk, you know, which isn't a real Twitter. Don't go looking for it.
Oh, it will be by tonight.
It will be. It'll be like nine people that'll be like the real Phantom Hawk, at the real Phantom Hawk, at the real Phantom Hawk 1, at the real Phantom Hawk 69, you know.
It'll be like trying to get pizza in New York, you know. You got Nick's, original Nick's, really original Nick's. So
the original original Nick's, the originally original Nick's. Operators operating operationally.
Yeah, got to live up to the hats.
Yeah, yeah.
Also as a part of that catalog that we saw before, we saw Pendragon.
Yes,
Pendragon. So what are we doing with him?
We are going to do a full book with him, and Kendra is writing that one. And it was another one that was definitely emotionally touching. It had a lot of, it had action in it too. I remember the first issue we did when it was under Blackjack, it was a lot of buildup and not a whole lot of payoff at the end. I mean, yeah, we were building the world and you're kind of, the threat was created with, you know, the Mauler. And, but for that first issue, I mean, you only see him fully dressed out on the very last page, which at the time I thought was really cool, but it just, the more I look at it, the more I look at it, the more I look at it and read over it, it wasn't holding water for me. So we're using some elements from that first script, but we're trying to throw in a little bit more action. You're still going to have that character development that was there. Kendra's really added to it as well. Get a little bit deeper into the lore, which I didn't really touch on. And Kendra, unbeknownst to me, is a huge like Arthurian legend guru fangirl about it, you know. So she was bringing in elements of stuff that I didn't even hear of, know about, or even think of. So it'll be a full 22-page book. It might actually be more, because the more we discuss, the more we talk about it, the bigger the story grows. So we just might be combining it. To tell the truth, it's probably just going to end up being like a graphic novel at the end. So 64 pages. Yeah, it's going to be pretty big. One of the things that we've been discussing around the office, make us sound more professional, was trying to get away from the single issue format and put all of our efforts and talents into graphic novels instead. So that way you don't get constantly being hounded or missing deadlines and release dates and things like that. We can just constantly just have these really big stories, throw them in a book and then release them. And then while everyone's, you know, gnawing through that, you know, we got a different graphic novels in the pipe getting ready to be released while we're going back and coming up with new stories. It's something we were toying around with. I really like the idea. Just get away from that single issue format, especially as an indie book, because it's, unless you're like Dynamite or some of the other ones, you know, we don't have the resources or the time because all of us have day jobs to be sitting there 12, 18 hours out of a day pumping out comic books. I wish I could. That'd be a dream, but I got to wait till I retire for that.
We got bad guys to catch in the meantime, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We got bad guys to catch.
So speaking of catching the bad guys, about a year or so ago, there were some things happening, and we got this really iconic sketch of Bengali.
Yes. So
let's talk about Bengali a little bit.
Ben is, I got to bring up his bio because I don't want to miss anything. Ben is, it's got a lot of things going on in that. It starts off as a story of loss. He loses his wife, and then a short time after he ends up losing his son. So he's got like, he goes dark. You know, you can imagine, you know, where you would go if you, you know, you lost a spouse and a child. Man, are all our stories this depressing?
the action more than makes up for it.
It does. But you know, the tragedy sets up those choices that heroes make. And I always think those are probably the most interesting stories, where your hero is somewhat tragically flawed and fractured, you know, and it makes for creative opportunities and situations for him to gauge in where, what choice is he going to make, you know. It's loading up right now. So,
because normal people don't wear tights, right?
Normal people don't wear tights, or they don't have symbiotic suits that bond to them because of their grief and pain, which is what is happening in Ben. But it's not alien in origin or anything like that. We're not trying to rip off Venom, but it does give him unique, you know, powers and things like that. So I'll just read it to you. You know, his real name is Riley Quinn. He's 6'2", 190 pounds, background. He was a single father struggling to raise his son in the city of Dos Cristos until a tragic accident cost the life of his son, left broken and no will to live. Quinn was ready to call it quits on life, but before he could pull the trigger and end it all, a mysterious black nanite liquid attached itself to his body, bonding with Riley. Feeling a newfound purpose in life with nothing left to lose, Riley takes to the streets as Bengali and brings punishment and pain to those that would make innocent people suffer. So
the look on that character is really unique. Especially the mask.
Yeah, with the points on there. Just, yeah, they're really cool.
So it's almost got like a Black Panther vibe. But that mask really stands out.
Yeah, it is definitely the focal point of that costume. And it's definitely the thing that catches everybody's eye to it. If you go on the Guerrilla Comics website, the first two or three pages are on there, and it's black and white. It's gritty. Ben definitely has a smart ass type attitude to him. Doesn't necessarily break the fourth wall, but he does talk to himself a lot, you know, because he is alone. So he's constantly talking to himself and giving his own social commentary of what he's doing. You know, not like he's self-aware that he's in a comic book. At least I hope that's not where we're going with it. I don't think we are. I just think with that personality, Clint's really careful about who he chooses to write for that character. And that's his baby. That's his fam hawk, you know? So he takes a lot of care in the concept and development of it. And the first three or four issues are pretty entertaining. It all starts off with, crime waves and kidnappings and then him, you know, putting himself in those situations and dealing out some really violent justice on these people. So definitely not one of our all age titles at all. So
can you talk a little bit about the all age titles that you guys are planning? You know, what I have 13-year-old nephews and you know, every once in a while they come to the comic shop and What along your catalog could I sit there and say, hey, read this for 15 minutes so I can go to the bathroom?
Oh, Guerrilla Warfare 1 will have that. We're going to try, if it doesn't fit like our criteria, what we would consider all ages or family friendly, we'll put a label on the book. But we're really going to try to keep the majority of the characters, with the exception of some issues of Phantom Hawk, because the world just requires that type of grittiness and a little bit of vulgarity. Same with Bengali. With Cardinal, you're not going to deal with that too much. Corvin Sparrow, you're not going to deal with that too much. Even though the writer for Corvin Sparrow, Rene Garza, he did put some swear words in there, but I think we're just going to change them to Spanish because Corvid is a Mexican national. So we'll get around that, kind of like Josh Whedon got around the censors with Firefly by having him, cuss in Mandarin. So that the majority of the titles, with the exception of Ben and Phantom Hawk, will be all ages. So Pendragon will be all ages, Sunburst will be all ages. Definitely, hey, I need 15 minutes here, read this comic book, type story work. So.
Right on. My good friend of the show, Jason Tondro, is actually a professor at the Coastal College of Georgia, who is deep into Arthurian mythos. So, he's probably going to enjoy that. So, with Guerrilla Comics all coming together, the team coalescing, Kendra and I are besties on Facebook, like, nice. All 400 of other besties, I guess. You get to see a lot of her, the things that she's doing behind the scenes and stuff like that. So that's always fun. As conventions start winding up, we obviously have the two issues that are going to come out, Phantom Hawk 5 and then Guerrilla Warfare. Folks should really check you guys out at these conventions, because they're going to be able to have the access to those sketch covers, which,
yeah,
I don't know. I might need to wrangle a plane ticket. So,
or I'll just save you one. I mean, either way,
right on.
I'll make sure one gets in your greedy little hands.
I love my greedy little hands. with things starting to really come together, next after the first two issues come out, like, can you give us a game plan of where you guys are going to be going for 2017?
Yeah, we only got the two cons scheduled for right now. That always might change. There might be more. I was supposed to do one in Utica, New York next week, but just some things just made it unavailable for me to go, mainly because I had nothing to bring. It's all still being printed. So sometimes you got to make those sacrifices, even though I'd really like to get up to New York eventually and explore that market and get those, those good folks up north and involved in our world. We're constantly working. So after I finish, I'm on page 5 of the Corvid part of the story for Guerrilla Warfare 1. I'll probably take a 12-hour break, have a cup of coffee, and then I'm going to start working on Phantom Hawk issue 6. Story's already written, so I'll go to the storyboard and start laying out pages while simultaneously working on the next issue of Wrath of Redemption. Corvid is going to continue. I'm just not going to be the lead artist on that one. I'm limiting myself to only drawing 2 books. Later on this year, we will have Sunburst number 1. I'm guesstimating around September, October. That'll be released. Another book.
Right on. Right for my birthday.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect. Perfect. I know what to get you. Rene has his book that I've been trying to get it developed, trying to get it off the ground. The story's written. The story's good. Concept sketches are in. We just need to – I want to put an artist on it. I want to put an artist on it that's going to really sell his story. I mean, the story itself, if it was a novel, it would sell itself. But since we're dealing in the visual medium here, I need someone that's going to be experienced in drawing space environments, ships, aliens, all those things to make it unique and make it pop. And then a colorist I already have in mind who draws a lot, works in that medium and making these spectacular space looking environments. I just got to sweet talk him at the con here in a couple of weeks and see if I can get him on board. So we got that going on with Sunburst. And then, that story that Renee was working on is called Ronin 28, and that's something that will be out by the end of the year. I'm kind of thinking around Christmas time for that. I should be able to have all the ducks in the row and get that story going. And then that should lead us right into Pendragon. Pendragon will be the last one done. We're hoping to get it out this year, around the same time frame, December. If anything, it'll be the first of 2018. So
right on.
That way we have it all out.
So it sounds like a full year. And
yeah.
And you're not going to have any rest.
No, I don't sleep much anyway, so I might as well utilize my time appropriately by drawing Phantom Hawk and drawing Wrath of Redemption. Because I had taken that long break from Phantom Hawk, and I was busy doing the editor-in-chief stuff. I didn't have a whole lot of drawing time as far as like sequential art, because I'm always doodling on something. But that story that Ray wrote, that Wrath of Redemption, the Cardinal story, that for some reason that just kind of inspired me. And I'm sure I sent you some of the pages as I was working on it with the cityscapes and the,
oh yeah,
I was getting crazy with perspective, and I was really pushing myself and trying a lot of new things. And when I got to the end of that 13 page book, I had to finish up Phantom Hawk issue 5. You'll see some changes in the art style, because when I started issue 5 of Phantom Hawk, it was a year and a half ago, you know, and I've progressed through there since then. So those last three pages of Phantom Hawk match the style of Wrath of Redemption and Guerrilla Warfare. So so I just want to kind of carry that momentum that I had on these books and move into issue 6, because issue 6 is going to get wild. Issue 7 is going to be tying the whole story together, and it's going to be wild also. But issue 6, I'm really looking forward to digging into, because we're going to bring in some other characters that hopefully I can build a book around. At least I want to. Bring in an X-Men type team, you know, your metahuman mutant, government funded, you know, deep shadow operation type book. So, and I've been sweet talking a buddy of mine from the Army, who's also a writer, and getting him to write it. And he goes, well, what do you want for this? I'm like, I want some Tom Clancy mixed with anything that explodes. So that's what I want. I want some like government, deep operative, world dominating villain, crazy stuff. You know, I want cloak and dagger. I want espionage. I want gunfights. I want exploding buildings. I want hand grenades and MOABs. I want all that stuff. And he goes, okay, I think I know where you're going from. You know, it's easy when you could say that to like a military guy. He's like, I got you. You want action. Yeah, that's what I want. I want action and an intriguing story, and, you know, and some righteous character development. I want to be able to care if this guy gets blown out through a window. You know, I want to hope he survives, because I can't write it all and I can't draw it all. I wish I could, but.
Right on, right on. Well, it wouldn't be the Indie Creative Spotlight if we didn't at some point talk about your process, about how you create comics and some of the things that you do, because at the end of the day, the whole reason to do this show is because there's a lot of folks out there that can add to the comics experience, especially as now indie creator, and being an indie creator is not the daunting task that it used to be back in the day when everybody was Xeroxing stuff.
Oh yeah. So doing your ash can sized books and, you know, the stuff I used to do in college, and college wasn't that long ago. Well, 11 years. Holy crap. I'm old.
I'm not going to tell you when I went to college, but everybody had the pointy hats and started talking about some guy named Paul riding a horse.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a class after that. Yeah. It's come a long way from, I mean, even from when I started out. I mean, it was around 2011. I got the wild hair to, you know, like I'm 30 something years old, and I haven't done anything close to what I want to do as far as putting a comic book out. So, one of my big things is helping out other indie creators as well, because they get into this and they don't know where to start. I know I didn't, you know, and it's taken me this long to build the contacts, resources, and the know-how that I have. So I have no problem sharing that information with anybody who wants to hit me up. And it's something that I've talked about at conventions, especially last year at South Texas Comic Con. I didn't have a table. I wasn't selling anything because I had nothing to sell. But I was asked by the promoter of the con to do a panel. So I did a from script all the way to finished product panel, you know, had a slideshow and all that. So the game has definitely changed from the days of Xeroxing your books and, you know, and trying to figure out what type of paper you should use for the cover and what you should use for the interior, how you're going to have it lettered. What's the process in doing that? Cause there's only so much you can get out of, you know, the books that are out there, the how-to books. But as far as creating comics, some of the most interesting stories and stuff will come from things of your personal life, you know, things that you've experienced or, seen, heard about, and read about. You know, there's that total wisdom of, you know, the human experience. You know, I'm talking all artsy farts, you know, but you know, a lot of creating a world is kind of a pain, and it does take some time. You'll spend more time doing that than in the beginning than you will working on actually putting pencil to paper as far as drawing it. Your supporting characters are what drive your book. I've always been a big believer in that. The books that always caught my interest, the supporting characters were equal to the hero or the heroine. You know, someone that enhances the hero, and the hero also enhances a little bit of the supporting character, but your supporting characters need to be interesting. They can't be just, you know, a sexy lampshade or, you know, someone who's constantly the one that draws the hero into action. You know, sometimes you got to have your supporting characters save your hero. Your supporting characters need to be able to hold their own. You know, I hate the damsel in distress. I can't stand that. There's more to those characters if you develop them correctly. A lot of people ask me though, how I come up with these supporting characters. I mean, heroes are easy to come up with. Usually there's some sort of reflection of the creator himself or herself. We take the best attributes of ourselves or how we would like to see ourselves, and we put it into this fictional character. So, yes, I'm Phantom Hawk. I said it.
Is this like Iron Man where I have to go get you a cheeseburger now?
Yeah. Can we all just kind of sit down and make it a little less formal? But supporting characters, where I develop those from is people that I know, people that I've worked with, people that I care for deeply. You know, people that have influenced me in one way or the other. And so I take that relationship that I have with them, and I also throw it in the comic book and build that real relationship with the fictional relationship that's going on. You know, like a lot of people love Downs and Gonzo. I love Downs and Gonzo. I love them as characters. I love them as people. Anytime I'm drawing them, I send it to my buddies that they're based off of. They're like, oh, that's so awesome. I can't wait to get a copy of it. And try and put those personalities in there. I mean, supporting characters, if you try and create one up out of thin air, you're going to be racking your head against the wall, you know. And sometimes you do have to create a character out of thin air and gear them towards what you want that character to do for you. But if you can just pull from your personal relationships from those people, you know, and you can turn them into a supporting character. Heck, you can even turn them into a hero. But Downs and Gonzo, I made them as much as their real life counterpart as possible, even down to how they talk, the wisecracks, you know, the personality traits. And I really see them probably one day, once this company grows, which I foresee it happening, getting pretty big. You know, the goal is to be as big as Xenoscope in about, I don't know, 5-10 years. So we're in it for the long game. I'd really love to see a Downs and Gonzo comic. You know, see them
get yes. That would be, you know, amazing.
Have a mini series of them, you know, doing what they do outside of the, you know, intervention of the Phantom Hawk, you know, getting them into trouble. So and then another character that I'm probably gonna bring in as a regular would be Javier Castle, who you'll see in, well, you saw him in issue 4, and you'll see him again in issue 5 and 6. And 7, he's going to become a little bit more prominent character, and not only an ally for Phantom Hawk, but also kind of as a challenging mouthpiece to what he's doing and why he's doing things. So, yeah, That's my process, and then we can go into the artistic part of it outside of creating it. I see things like a movie. And I didn't realize how much I did that until I stopped drawing stuff I had written and started drawing for other people's stories, you know. And first thing I would do is I'd talk to the writer. I'm like, okay, how did you kind of see this shot in your head? And they'd break it down. I'm like, okay, that's cool. But what if we did this? And then there'd be a lot of collaboration, a lot of back and forth, which is really cool. And it's real exciting because you just start amping each other up and you start coming up with ideas and, you know, like, oh, what if we did this? What if we put the camera up here? And, you know, so that's always fun. And then once you have that down, you know, you go to your thumbnails because you don't want to just start on 11 by 17 piece of paper. It's expensive. Yeah, I'll have some. It's my child taking my food order. Sorry about that. her lips underneath the door. Dad, are you going to have some bacon? I mean, have you not met me? Of course I'm going to have some bacon. Bacon's good.
Well, speaking of you know, things in your, really in your environment, one of the things that I really enjoy about how you put your process of doing stuff out into the world, like, for example, you were talking earlier, you were at that convention last year doing that huge panel. You broadcast it on Facebook, mm-hmm. you know, so people who weren't there could get in on the experience and actually, you know, hang out with you guys digitally and watch that work. But one of the things I really enjoy, getting from you, and obviously, you know, we talk back and forth quite a bit.
Yeah.
I love when you are going for an interesting perspective shot in your art, especially in some of the Gonzo and Down stuff. You'll throw on body armor with, you know, like an airsoft in your hand or something like that, and take a picture and then go off your own self. How a lot with so many artists now using tools like Manga Studio, yeah. Or Poser or things like that, or even those posable mannequins. How
like one of these
essential do you, yes, like one of those, you know, yeah. how often do you transition from the little, you know, guy jumping on the stand to actually kitting up and you know, taking a reference of yourself?
Quite a bit, actually. I think photo reference really adds to it because you can look online for stock photography all day long and you might be able to find something, maybe. I say probably about 10% of the time you can find something they can actually use. Outside of finding environments, like just for example, I'm using Corvid and Sparrow. Well, the first couple of pages, it takes place at Oxford University. I can't draw that off memory. I had to go in and research that and print out pages, especially with some of the scenes that take place just outside the school for student housing, you know, so I had to look that up too. But as far as when I make that decision, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to throw on some body armor and a helmet. It's because it's a unique shot that I need, that I'm not going to be able to find online. You know, it's something that I'm going to have to create myself. Even with the camera angles where I'm stacking the tripod on boxes so I can have that overhead shot, you know, and then hit the 10-second timer and try and get myself in position and not look goofy and have it go off, which it'll take me at least 20 minutes to get the shot right that I need. The posable mannequins definitely come in handy. When the stands are working correctly, I've been having problems with one because I'm using it all the time and having that interaction of, you know, putting those characters together to, because you can see it in your head and then you try and put it on paper, like in a fight scene, like you want them to do like an arm bar, you know, a standing arm bar, you know, where you're painting the wrist back. That's one of the scenes I'm actually working on right now. So, and my kids are getting tired of being, you know, test dummies for that. Hey, come here and let me put you in this arm bar real quick and get a picture. You know?
So, well, isn't that what having kids is all about?
That's what I thought. Apparently I was wrong. I don't know. They're like, Dad, you can't do that. It's abuse. And I'm like, I don't think it is because I'm not doing anything. You know, I'm teaching you. It's an instructional method. Not dropping, give me 20. No. But yeah, the use of photo references. it is an integral part. You know, I didn't know how much it was. A lot of my earlier issues, I didn't use any photo reference. You know, I tried to do it all through building the world in my head. And, you know, sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. But once I started using photo reference, I have a file inside my computer that's called the photo morgue, and I have it broken down by buildings, environments, and, you know, lamps and street lamps and street lights and, you know, dark alleyways. I have it really organized, you know, that military mind, you know, everything has to be organized. So, and dress right, dress. So, I use it quite a bit.
Now, what about when you have to deal with an environment or a situation that there really isn't a photo reference for? Like, for example, you got sunburst coming up, you know, how can you do workarounds for that? I mean, I know like George Lucas, when he was creating, you know, his stuff went to a lot of World War II photo reference.
Yeah, for the fighter sequences. Yeah.
Yeah. Right on. What do you have in your process, or what do you have in your toolbox that when you're sitting there going, okay, so he's flying out of orbit. Crap. NASA.
Yeah, you could do NASA. There's a lot of programs out there too. It's an old program and I still use it to this day. If there's an environment that doesn't exist, I can create it. And it's called Bryce 3D. And that's its entire purpose, is to build worlds, to build environments. And you can do animation on it too. And you can also build ships, but it's very limited in, on the skins that you can put on there. It's kind of like PlayStation 2 type level graphics, but it definitely gives you that, that perspective or that ability to build that world, and you can move the camera wherever you want, and you can put the sun wherever you want. If you want a moon and a sun, or you want two suns or three suns, you can put that in there. Essentially you're building a 3D diorama of what you want. So for instance, I'll have, if the planet has outside of it, there's like a big moon that should be visible. Well, you can throw a sphere in there, put a skin on it, change its opacity, and then make it look like it's outside of, you know, the atmosphere. So, and then the ships, you just build it with geometric shapes and do the best you can. There's also some free transform stuff in there. You can smooth it out. And there's a lot you can do with it if you play around with it. And that's a pretty simple program to use. I mean, if you play around with it for about a week, you'd have it down, you know, at least being able to do what you needed to do. So
in the year and a half that you've been working on Phantom Hawk 5, what's the biggest lesson that you think you've learned in producing and getting to the end pages of this book?
Keeping on a schedule, I think, making that time, because there's a lot of times where I know I'm not the only one in the indie comics game that feels this way. You get done working a long day on your day job to pay the bills, and really the only thing you want to do is sit down, crack open a beer, and watch TV. So I guess that goes back down to time management and going back to my military mindset of, you know, organizing my entire day, you know, forcing myself to do it, because I know I'm not tired. I'm just uninspired. Get your butt up, go sit on the desk and start cranking out art, you know. So got to have that little drill sergeant talk with myself. You better get your ass on that chair, get that pencil in hand, start moving. All right, roger that. So my time management. So like a typical day is, since I work a midnight shift, when I get home in the morning, I get the kids on task, getting ready for school, and then I'm in here. I just tell them, hey, when that alarm goes off, come get me. I'm taking you to school. You better be ready. I don't care if you have one sock on one foot and one shoe on the other, you're going. So, and I'll sit here and I'll draw on it. I'll work on the book. And I'll do that till for at least 3 or 4 hours, or work on something that is related to the company. But I try to utilize the majority of that morning time on drawing pages. And then I'll get about 5 or 6 hours of rack time. And then I get up, have a cup of coffee, and then I'm back at the drawing table, or I'm back in front of the computer, you know, getting things ready for the issue. Another lesson learned is perspective. You can't fake perspective. Two things you can't fake in comics: you can't fake perspective and you can't fake anatomy. You can play around with anatomy. You can kind of do some magician stuff with anatomy, but you can't really fake it. You have to know basically what all the parts are, or at least how they look. You don't have to name them. It's not science class, but perspective is a big thing, and it's something that I've always felt that I was weak on. So it's something that I spent a lot of time on. I'll set up the grid, I'll have my vanishing points, and then start playing around. I'll go through at least 2 or 3 pieces of scratch paper, just trying to get that angle right of where I want it. So those are the two biggest lessons that I've picked up on issue five. And then issue six, I'll pick another focal point of something that I'm weak on and try and build upon that. So I'm just constantly reinforcing and developing these skill sets. You know, you just never stop learning. I think that's one of the biggest downfalls of any artist is they feel that they've mastered it or conquered it, and you know, they don't find a new way to reinnovate it or, you know, make it interesting. So that's a really long-winded answer.
Well, that's kind of what we're looking for. So, you know, you talk, we're going to listen.
All right.
We're running out to the bottom of the show. So that way we can free you up and allow you to go get the bacon you so, you know, richly deserve.
Yeah, what's killing me is you can smell it right now.
Where can people stalk you on the internet if they want to learn more about you and Gorilla Comics?
You can go to gorillacomics.com. Comics is spelled COMX. Gorilla is spelled wrong for trademark purposes. It's only one R instead of two. So, yeah, www.gorillacomics.com. On Instagram, Gorilla Comics doesn't have a presence, but I do, and I'm constantly, since I'm a co-owner of Gorilla, I'm constantly doing posting Gorilla Comics material on there, so you can follow me at Nick Garber Art. Also Twitter, you have at Gorilla Comics and at Nick Garber Art, and those are always linked together one way or another. So if I'm posting stuff for Gorilla, it's getting posted on Nick Garber Art, you know, and vice versa. Facebook, you have the Phantom Hawk page, you have the Gorilla Comics page, and you have Nick Garber Art page. And from there, that should take you to, it should all lead to one of the other pages in the Cyberverse. So if you get on one, it'll link you to the other. So we try to make it as user-friendly as possible.
Awesome. And convention dates coming up. You want to just throw those down real quick?
Yeah. April 28th through the 30th, McAllen, Texas for the, this is the fourth annual South Texas Comic Con. Each show keeps getting bigger. I'm very excited. I was kicking myself last year that I didn't get a table, even if I was just there doing commissions. June 16th and 17th, no, 17th and 18th in St. Louis, Missouri. Yeah, the bacon's ready. I'm coming. June 17th and 18th, St. Louis, Missouri for Mighty Con. And I will be there with Ray Merrick, who's the writer for Wrath of Redemption in the Guerrilla Warfare anthology. Who will be joining me at South Texas will be Clint Scott, co-owner and artist, creator of Bengali, and he's also the artist for Sunburst, and Renee Garza, who is the author of Corvid and Sparrow for the Guerrilla Warfare anthology, and Ronin 28, and he's written some things for Bengali as well. And you can see the first two or three pages of Bengali on the Gorilla Comics website for free.
Right on. Well, we're going to link to it all in the show notes, and then that way everybody can click to their heart's content and you know, learn everything there is to know about Gorilla Comics. So
maybe a little too much.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how much quoting you're doing on the site. So
right.
Again, thank you enough for once again coming on and you know, ushering in the next stages of the Indie Creator Spotlight. We're definitely following everything you're doing, and we love your comics. So please continue doing what you're doing.
I appreciate it. You keep reading it, I'll keep making it. So
that sounds like a deal to me. So for the BAMF podcast and for Indie Creator Spotlight, this has been Walt Robillard, and I'm working with Nick on bringing you more content. And we're out.
All right.